is Virginia Retirement System versus Ricky A. Blair. Does the Commonwealth need any, or the VRS need any rebuttal time?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, Judge.
Certainly.
Okay.
All right. We're ready when you are.
All right. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Goodman. I represent the appellant agency, VRS, in this case. And this case, in brief, is a matter of a disability retirement application that was filed. Mr. Blair went through the process, which involved a series of reviews by our medical board and an informal fact-finding proceeding under the Administrative Process Act. Each of these reviews resulted in a recommendation to the Virginia Retirement System that the application be denied. Ultimately, the application was denied by final case decision that was appealed to the Hampton Circuit Court. The Hampton Circuit Court, as you'll see in the Joint Appendix at 476, issued a letter opinion that reversed the Circuit Court, or that reversed the VRS final case decision, and we took our appeal from there. And although there are three distinct assignments of error in our brief, I really believe they can be boiled down to one statement. The Circuit Court erred in overturning the VRS case decision because the decision itself is indeed supported by substantial evidence.
The appellee seems to say that the amendment to the statute changes the whole standard of review.
Well, sir, that was negated in March of this year. I believe Judge McCullough was on the panel, and Judge Humphreys wrote published opinion in the Mucci series of cases. It's M-U-C-C-I. And on page 15 of that slip opinion, in paragraph, or it's footnote 9, it says this standard of review, referring to 2.24027, was not altered by the 2013 amendments. So the standard of review remains the same as it's always been. This court's standard review here, of course, is a de novo review of the Circuit Court's application of the substantial evidence standard. And based on that, VRS submits that the Circuit Court misapplied the substantial evidence standard. It's in the face of the opinion itself. Judge Frank referred to the Mucci case. Contrary to the appellee's or to Blair's assertions in his brief, the standard has not changed. And in here, second, the court has they misstated the standard and misapplied the standard in here. And in doing so, it reweighed the evidence, which, as we point out in our brief, the Circuit Court has no authority to do. The Circuit Court is essentially the equivalent of this tribunal here, where they review the agency case decision, and the issue of law for them in this case is whether there is substantial evidence to support that decision.
It seems to me, unless I misread it, and opposing counsel can correct me, that the trial court only viewed or only determined that there was substantial evidence to support the contrary finding. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I don't think it goes quite that far. I think that when you read the letter opinion as a whole, it looks like the Circuit Court applied some sort of preponderance standard and said, okay, there's more evidence for disability retirement than there is against it, so we're going to overrule the VRS in this thing.
Mr. Goodman, if VRS puts on no evidence, issues no medical board report, puts nothing in front of the agency head to make the determination, employee puts on plenty of evidence, there's an informal fact finding, and the informal fact finder finds reasons to discredit whatever evidence that the claimant makes, is there does that constitute substantial evidence in the record to support a denial of benefits?
In your hypothetical, Judge, if you take away the medical board's review, which I might add here is mandated by statute under 51.1-124.23, then I believe that's a much closer call. I think that VRS, would need to, in addition to just saying, well, we relied on the fact finder's recommendation, we would probably need to point to specific pieces of...
But if the fact finder in the letter specifies, I don't find this witness credible, and VRS's ultimate decision incorporates or references the fact finder's conclusion, then for appellate review, isn't it established that the witness wasn't credible?
Yes, it would. It would establish that the witness wasn't credible in there. In these particular cases, though, there's not a finding of credibility in there. But I think I understand the point the court's making there. But I believe that in this situation that and I've been accused in other arguments of this being a bootstrap argument. You would never lose if you could just say the fact finder said no, the medical board said no, and if we say no, we always win. I think there has to be something there, and I believe in this case the fact finder did point to an analysis of the medical evidence and of the questioning of Mr. Blair and also of the doctors at the hearing itself. In addition, the medical board in each of its reviews lines up at the end, a point to they're at 44, 64, and 219 of the joint appendix. Those are the medical board reviews that come in. At the end of those reviews is an inventory of all of the medical evidence that that they reviewed in arriving at their recommendation. And with respect to each of these, the medical board had the same evidence that the treating physicians did. I will concede the difference is the medical board doesn't see the person at all, but they have the same medical evidence, and I submit that their opinion or their recommendation on that medical evidence does indeed have substance. And if there's I was going to make a different point and I just lost it, I'm afraid.
Well, let me ask you this. The independent fact finder, if I read that report correctly, said the medical record doesn't support claimant's testimony. Is that a fair portrayal?
I think that in the cases, in what the fact finder was saying at that point was the medical evidence that she observed in the agency record didn't support that the conditions for which he brought forward for the disability retirement were indeed disabling. I think it was on the issue of whether they were disabling, because we have probably six conditions that were listed in here, and the fact finder was saying that, well, the testimony that, well, this is disabling, that is disabling, is not supported by the medical evidence.
That was my question.
And again, underneath all this is the burden is on the applicant to make the case that they have indeed met the standard under 51.1156. And I would, again, the standard that we pointed out in my brief is that a reasonable person would necessarily have to come to a different conclusion than VRS did. And I would direct the court's attention, in addition to the independent fact finder's report and the three medical board reviews, to the employer information that was provided at the time of the application. That's at the appendix, pages 39 and 40, where the employer made comments regarding the application at its outset, and seemed like that there was inconsistencies at that time too. And I think when you take all those together, there's evidence of substance that supports our decision, and we would ask that you would uphold, direct the circuit court to issue an order that the case decision is supported by substantial evidence and that the case decision of VRS should be upheld.
All right, you have 5 minutes and 30 seconds remaining, roughly, on your argument time.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Summers?
May it please the court, I'm Jeff Summers, representing Ricky Blair in this resisting of an appeal by the VRS from the City of Hampton Circuit Court. With me at counsel table is David Horn, Mr. Blair's trial counsel. This court should affirm the circuit court's award of disability. The trial court implicitly rejected everything that came out of the medical board because it saw it wasn't a medical board. It's a cost containment company.
Well, does the trial court have the ability to do that given that it's sitting as an appellate court? And if it does, would we have the ability to flip that determination because we're both sitting as appellate courts?
I understand. I think you can. I think the trial court could as well. Where the statute contemplates a medical board, physicians, medical service providers, and what you have is, as we see from the appendix where we have the portal printout, it is a black box. VRS has a contractor. They upload documents. Something happens. We know not what. We don't know who sees it. We don't know what their qualifications are. And we have an output.
Was this objection made before the circuit court proceedings? Was it made in the agency proceedings? An objection to the medical board report being utilized?
I believe it was contested. I don't know that it was a true on-your-feet objection, but it was disputed, certainly.
Can you, not the conclusions, but that it actually shouldn't have been admissible, which is what you argue on brief, where in the record before the agency is there any indication that it wasn't, that it should not have been considered?
I don't believe it's in there at all, Your Honor.
Okay, isn't it waived then?
I think the issue of law about whether a medical board cost containment contractor is still before you. The report, but the issue is this contractor a medical board as the statute contemplates is before you?
Well, don't we have to assume official regularity and that the agency would have followed the statutory mandate, that there would have been four physicians who are not VRS retirees who reviewed the file? Doesn't the presumption of regularity grant them that?
Given that they put in the portal, I don't think it does. Why? I can see the question coming. When you have, as we can see from the appendix, and it's the UR portal itself, which is page 213, you see what the medical board really is. It's not a medical board. It's a cost containment company.
But the General Assembly mandated that this cost containment company, whatever we want to call it, perform a review, and that then it submits a report. Isn't the complaint then with the General Assembly for doing that rather than... the other difficulty that maybe you can help me with is... all we have is one case before us. And so it may be that, in fact, it's a black box cost containment device. But I don't. Does the record really establish that? All it shows is, in this instance, they didn't agree with your claim of disability. And we have a very detailed decision by the hearing officer agreeing with that assessment.
Based on this cost containment company's input to the hearing officer.
Well, not only that. And I was troubled with the trial court's letter opinion that said things like VRS completely ignored the issues with his knees, yet in the fact finder's letter opinion, which is I think, fairly incorporated in VRS's last letter because it references the informal fact finding. There's a heading that says knee issues and then 20 lines of text detailing her review of the knee issues. And then more importantly, on the COPD issue, she specifically finds that the testifying doctor testified based on misinformation. And so don't you face a situation where that misinformation either came from your client, which would call into question all of his, any evidence he puts forward, was a mistake by the doctor because he wasn't paying enough attention to the file, or was an innocent mistake? One of those three options has to be the answer, and can't the fact finder, VRS, conclude it's the first or the second, which causes you major problems on your appeal?
I have to say yes, but it could also be that the hearing officer made mistakes as well, particularly when you look at Dr. Vader's testimony about the air traffic and the significance of the air traffic.
But if VRS adopts the factual findings and the credibility findings of VRS, neither the circuit court nor this court can do anything about that, correct? Unless it's inherently incredible.
I believe you're correct. And I would say that it is inherently, excuse me, I keep hitting that microphone. It is inherently incredible when this medical board isn't a medical board. We don't know who saw those records. We don't have any idea if it was a physician. In fact, what we do know...
Right, but the statute doesn't require that. The statute talks about physicians or other healthcare professionals.
And the only thing that comes out of United Review is signed by a person with a master's in social work.
But who is not necessarily performing the review, but who is conveying the decision?
But that's the only document that's signed by anyone.
But all the medical records that you submitted, were there any electronic signatures of physicians that may have been entered by somebody else? I mean, obviously, you know, in the classic sense, that may be hearsay, but in these proceedings, don't we allow all sorts of hearsay records, including the records that were introduced by your client?
Except when the person who is saying, here's the stuff, has no medical qualification. A social worker is not a medical provider.
Do you believe that the doctors that treated your patient are the ones who turned the record over, to physically sent the records in, or do you believe it was an office staffer who likely has no medical degree?
I believe it was the physician who evaluated the medical conditions. But we don't know that from United Health Review.
Other than the fact that the presumption of official regularity would be that they complied with the statute. If you wanted, and therefore, if you wanted to raise this issue, didn't you have to raise it below?
Yes, Your Honor. But again, I assert that it was contested. The whole point, if you get into the circuit court, they implicitly, if not explicitly, reject all of the VRS's medical evidence. That's how it came to the conclusion for Blair, that everything else is gone and only Blair's evidence is in the record.
But
is that the prerogative of the circuit court as an appellate court to reject testimony?
It can reject it as a matter of law where it finds that it's incredible, as you could. If somebody came before this appellate court and the trial evidence was preposterously wrong, you could reject it because it would be preposterous.
So, but to agree with you, we would have to find that the head of VRS is preposterous, the medical board is preposterous, and the informal fact finder is preposterous.
You would have to find that the medical board is preposterous because everything flows from that. If that pin is pulled, the Jenga tower falls.
Well, right, but the informal fact finder and the actual fact finder found that the medical board was not preposterous. So necessarily we would have to conclude that everybody below was preposterous until we got to the circuit court.
Your Honor, I'm going to split a hair with you. You would have to find the medical board was preposterous. The others would really be wrong for relying on them. I'm not going to impute that to the VRS or to its fact finder. But here we have this device.
I don't know from this record whether, for example, you have a bunch of doctors, they receive documents, and then by informal email they say thumbs up, thumbs down for these reasons, and then the social worker then aggregates this disparate board email traffic or phone conversation and writes some roughly tidy report. Or if, as you say, they only have one stamp to ink up, which is denied, and it's just assembly line, denied, denied. But I just don't know on the record before me what I've got. And there's that presumption of regularity, which until rebutted means I have to accept the regularity of the official action.
In the Johnson case, where you actually had opposing physicians, we cited it in our brief, there's the difference. And that was before the statute was changed. But and while I'm on that, I want to touch that. The trial court now, I understand counsel's argument to you about the standard of review, but that statute was changed. The trial court now isn't as limited as it once was. That's deliberate. But, you know, the assembly didn't change the words in our statutes intending to keep them the same.
Did the amendment change the definition of substantial evidence?
No, Your Honor, but it empowers the court to do more than simply...
Did the amendment change the fact that the circuit court generally has to defer to decision of the agency?
I think it did. I think that's what it did change, that it doesn't have to be as deferential as it once did.
Well, given that the General Assembly is deemed to know what this court has said substantial evidence means, and whatever amendment they made, they chose to keep substantial evidence, doesn't that mean, as we have already said in a few cases since the amendment, that it means that at least that part on means the same thing?
I think substantial evidence remains substantial evidence, yes.
And so if any rational trier of fact could have concluded that he wasn't entitled to disability retirement, we have to affirm that, correct? We need to find that the informal fact finder and VRS were irrational.
And I think you can because of the process that was used in this case. Had there been physicians, if we had had reports signed by physicians from somewhere, either in the Commonwealth or outside, that said, we've gone over these records, we dispute the medical findings, or we dispute the conclusions drawn from the medical findings.
What is our basis for concluding that the medical board report does not represent the opinions of four non-VRS physicians on this record?
You don't have anything from four non-VRS physicians. You have things from a master's in social work.
I have a report mandated by statute, and the statute says that the report has to contain the opinions. Doesn't say they have to sign it, but has to be based on the opinions of four physicians who are not VRS participants. And so I have a report that VRS says complies with the statute. They're entitled to a presumption of regularity that they followed the statute. What do you have to suggest to me that that presumption has been rebutted other than it was signed by somebody other than the four physicians?
That's it, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, I see my light has just gone out.
Well, you have 2 minutes, but this question of what the General Assembly intended with these statutory amendments, whether they were clarifying or codifying or intended to modify the law, we may not be the final stop on that determination. Anyway, all right. Any further
Thank
questions?
You,
Thank you very much for your
Thank
argument.
You,
you have a little over 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Unless the court has any questions, my argument is complete.
Thank you both very much. We'll come down to Greek Council. And you may need a recess.